Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
The other detective asked me about medications and stuff, and I said, well, our medications are sitting at the house. That's when I told him that, you know, she had fibromyalgia and that she was bipolar. And literally, to this day, that guilt still crushes me for saying that, because he literally closed his notebook and took not another note the whole time we were talking to him. And he said, oh, she probably just ran off.
On the morning of September 20th, 2001, Angela Whalen Hudson walked her two children to the bus stop in Pelham, North Carolina. When her children returned home from school later that day, Angela was gone. They were told by their stepfather that she said she had to go do something and just walked off. In the weeks leading up to Angela's disappearance, she and her husband Robert had begun divorce proceedings, and Angela had gotten a restraining order against him. She and the children remained living in the house, but he was permitted to remain on the property to carry out his work as a carpenter and cabinet maker in his shop located on the property. That evening, Angela's aunt arrived at the house for a dinner that they had arranged. She'd been trying to call Angela to see if she needed her to bring anything for dinner, but after being unable to reach Angela, she decided that she would just make the 20-minute journey over to her house. When she arrived, she found a meal half prepared, and Angela was nowhere to be seen. That was almost 17 years ago, and in those 17 years, no trace of Angela has ever been found. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 136 of The Vanished, Angela Whalen Hudson's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Up until her late 20s, Angela had moved back and forth from her birthplace in Danville, Virginia to Arizona. She had mostly grown up in Arizona, but with family back in Danville, when the relationship broke down with her children's father, moving back to Danville to be near her family, and in particular her aunt, was an easy choice for her. She had two children, a young son and a teenage daughter, and it was after her move back to Virginia that she met her soon-to-be husband, Robert. After they got together, she and the children moved and settled with Robert 20 minutes over the border into North Carolina. I spoke to Angela's sister Melissa for this episode. Here's Melissa talking about Angela's childhood and the time leading up to her disappearance.
She was born there in Danville, Virginia. And then when she was about two, my family moved to California for a year and then to Arizona. We lived in Arizona probably 12 years. Moved back to Virginia for 3 years and then back to Arizona until she then went over to move back to Virginia. Probably 3.5 to 4 years before she disappeared. She moved out of the house at the age of 16, and she really loved to do daycare work and babysitting. So when she was 16 and she moved out, she did nanny service and babysitting for a few families. And then when she was 18, she actually did training and went through a program so that she could actually work at daycare centers. She loved babies. She loved babies. That was the majority of her work that she did, you know, through different periods of time in her adult life, was working with children and working at daycare centers. She had lived with me temporarily in California for about 3 months after an additional failed relationship that she had. And then she decided, I need a fresh start. I'm going to move to Virginia because we do have family in Virginia. And then while she was back there, that's when she met Robert and Robert Hudson, who was her husband when she disappeared.
According to Angela's family, she had a pattern of abusive relationships over the years. Because of that and her health conditions, everyone kept tabs on her and supported her when she needed it.
But her as a person, she was a very sweet person. She was a loving person. She liked to have fun. She liked to be with the kids. She was a good person that always seemed to wind up in really crappy circumstances. And I know that there's always like that pattern behind there that makes them choose who they choose. You know, there's reasons, but I always felt bad that she never had anybody to just love her and appreciate who she was just because she was her. My aunts had told me that she was doing really good. And, you know, she seemed to have that zest again, like she used to have. And, you know, she seemed to be on a really good path. And then she met Robert and got married and moved to North Carolina, which is actually just right across the border. It only takes about 15 minutes to get from where she lived to where he lived. And then she got married and things kind of went awry from there.
Approximately 2 years into their marriage and around a month before she disappeared, Angela went to her aunt and confided in her that she wanted a divorce from Robert. She hadn't bothered her two sisters with her troubles about it, but her aunt was there for her, helping her through the process.
Angie had a thing where when she would talk to me or my younger sister, she would only tell us, you know, the positive things happening in her life, like, you know, things are going well, or, you know, one of her kids got good grades, or she got to go do something that she wanted to do, or she was going to go on a picnic, you know, stuff like that. She tried to keep the bad side of things going on. The last time I spoke with her was approximately 3 weeks before she disappeared. And that's when she told me that she was going to get a divorce because Robert wasn't the person that she thought he was. My sister, unfortunately, most of her relationships that she ever had ended up being with abusive people, with abusive men. So I kind of took on my own when she said that he's not the person she thought he was, that he was probably a controlling, abusive man. She had gone on, I believe, the beginning of August, and she retained an attorney and started and actually filed divorce papers, started, you know, with her attorney. The day that she disappeared, she had an appointment, her second appointment with her divorce attorney that day that she never showed up for.
So you heard that correctly. Angela had begun the divorce process, and her second appointment with the attorney was set for the day that she ended up disappearing. She never made it to that meeting. Shortly after meeting with her divorce attorney for the first time, with the help of her aunt, Angela also filed a restraining order. The judge granted that order and allowed Angela and her two children to stay at the residence for 1 year, so she would have time to get her finances sorted and find a new home. But the judge also granted something unusual. Robert, who was a cabinet maker, had his shop on site at their home, just about 200 feet from the house. The judge allowed Robert to work in the shop from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day, as long as he stayed clear of the house. After Angela and Robert split, he moved in with his adult son close by, but every time he came and went to the property, he had to pass the home to get to the shop.
Because my aunt went with her to court, said that Robert had attacked her and taken the phones away that he had hit her. And he had taken the phones out of the house, and she was afraid because he did have, you know, firearms and stuff. You're in a rural area. Everybody has firearms, right? So she was afraid. She went, and my aunt actually took her to file a restraining order. So domestic violence was the reason. They granted it for 1 year. He supposedly was staying with his son, who at the time, I believe, was in a old trailer, like maybe 10 minutes down the road. My aunt, the day that she took my sister to the court to have the restraining, they had the restraining order hearing. When they were walking out of the courtroom, because the judge granted that Angie and the children could stay in the house for 1 year until, you know, she found a job and found a place to live. As they were walking out the courtroom, my aunt told me that he looked at Angie and said, "You won't, or you'll be out before the end of the month," or something to that effect. The original detectives had been told that 100 times. But never thought that was reason to ever search or talk to him or, you know, other than idle chit chat.
After this, Angela told her aunt that if anything ever happened to her, she must find her journals because she was documenting everything her husband did to her. 16 months after Angela's disappearance, the divorce was granted. On the day Angela disappeared, she waved her kids off at the bus stop, and the elderly neighbors that lived near the end of the driveway witnessed her walk back home. The only other person that the neighbor saw come or go that day was her husband. Angela's only known plans for that day were to attend the second divorce meeting with her attorney and then prepare dinner for her aunt, who would be coming over that evening. Her aunt had been trying to reach her for a couple days, and that day she was wanting to know if she could bring anything over for dinner. But the phone wasn't working, so she just decided to drive over. When she walked into the house, the kids were saying they couldn't find Angela, and that they couldn't call out because the phone was broken. There was food on the table and counter that was half prepared, meat and vegetables that had been cut up.
One of my aunts back there, she was supposed to go out and have dinner with Angie and the kids, and she hadn't heard from them, and she had been trying to call them for apparently a couple of days, and the phone wasn't working. She ended up driving out there, and she found the kids in the house and found my nephew was 5 and my niece was 15 at the time. And she asked them where my sister was. And they're like, "We don't know. She didn't come home. We can't find her." And Robert was out in the shop, in his workshop. And she asked, and he goes, "Oh, she told me she had to go somewhere, and I haven't seen her since."
When it came to finding out what had actually occurred that day, according to Robert, he had been working in his shop, and Angela came to tell him that she had to go and do something, and then she just walked off. She didn't get into her car, which would have been the only means of getting to her appointment, or into town, or anywhere that wasn't a small convenience store up the road. She just walked away from the property and never came back. Little is known about what Angela was wearing on the day she went missing, but at the time of her disappearance, Angela was 33 years old and described as having shoulder-length blonde hair and blue eyes. She was 5'7" tall, weighing approximately 120 pounds. Angela had several tattoos, including a Chinese dragon on her right upper shoulder, a red scorpion on her back, and some hieroglyphics on her right ankle. Angela also had a surgical scar on her abdomen. Angela was known to go by Angie or Angel, and the last confirmed sighting of her was earlier that morning by the neighbor after she got her 2 children off to school. Her husband Robert claims that he last saw her at her residence at approximately 10 a.m. That's when she allegedly said that she needed to go somewhere. She left behind her 2 children whom she adored, and she had never left before without making prior arrangements with someone. She also left behind her car and all of her possessions, including her purse, cell phone, medication, jewelry, and her glasses. It was very strange for Angela to leave those glasses behind because she had an eye condition. It was difficult for her to be out in the sunlight without her glasses. She was known to take them everywhere. The property where she was last seen was located on a road in a rural and isolated location. We'll get to that more in a little bit. After Angela's aunt realized that something wasn't right, she used her cell phone to call the police and had them come out to the property.
So my aunt then called the sheriff's department and asked them if they could do a welfare check. And so when they got out there, you know, they kind of glanced around, they talked to Robert, and then they carried on and went back to their station. So that was pretty much the gist of any and all searches that have ever been done to the home or property.
When the deputies arrived, they wrote down all the information about Angela, glanced around the kitchen and living room, then walked around outside of the house. Before they left, one of the deputies told Angela's aunt that the phone line had been disabled. When they spoke to Robert, they got the same story.
He had told the sheriff's deputy that around 10 o'clock is when she said that she had to go somewhere and walked off, and he said he just went back in his shop. Because even with the restraining order, he could be in the shop, he just couldn't be in the house.
There seemed to be no sense of urgency from the police to look into Angela's disappearance, and no amount of explaining by her aunt seemed to help either. 2 days later, on September 22, 2001, an official missing persons report was filed.
I was told that when the case was then assigned to the detectives, to the two initial original detectives, that they had gone out and they just said, hey, do you know where she could be? And he was like, no, I don't know where she is. He apparently tried to make it sound like that this was like a common trait of hers, the running off part, which is completely not true. The only times that she ever left her children, she would contact my husband and I, because, you know, she was bipolar and she did have those times where she was in a dark place. She would contact my husband and I. She would make prior arrangements for the children to come and temporarily stay with us. She would do the, you know, parental locus paperwork and stuff so we could, you know, if they needed to go to the doctor or anything like that. She would bring them to, you know, her, and she would usually have a friend or somebody come with her. They would bring the kids and their belongings. She called them once a week. If they were ever with us during a holiday or birthday, she would come up and spend that couple of days with them for that, you know, holiday or birthday. And then when she felt like she had herself back together, she felt like they adjusted her medication correctly and she was in the good again, she would come get them or we would drive them down. And this happened probably 4 times over their lifetime. So I can't believe that she wouldn't even make arrangements like with my aunt, who was, you know, 20 minutes away and was there with the kids all the time. I can't believe that she wouldn't make arrangements if she was having one of those moments. But she wasn't. According to my family and my niece and my aunt, she wasn't in one of those times. After the police went out and the sheriff's department had gone out and they, you know, took the statement from Robert that he hadn't seen her in a couple of days, she said she had to go somewhere and walked off, which is odd because her car was there.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Once it was apparent that Angela was missing, her aunt took the two children with her. Everyone who knew Angela knew that she lived for her children. Even during her hard times dealing with mental illness, she always put their best interests first and foremost. She had a restraining order against her husband, and no one who knew Angela believed for a second that she would walk away from the house, knowing the kids would come home from school that day, with only the man she had a restraining order against to care for them. It just made no sense to anyone.
He could not stand my niece. He actually told us when we were all talking that she was the whole reason that their marriage didn't work. So why would you leave your children there with the man that thought that? And his biggest objective when I went back there was, let me sign off saying I don't want anything to do with these kids. I'm not responsible for them. I'm not paying for them. And he got me that paper. He gave it to his son to give to me. And he didn't want any responsibility with any of those kids, with her kids. So why would you leave your children in that situation? And then while we were having the conversation, he also contradicted himself. He also contradicted his initial report by saying, oh, she left in the car. And we were like, wait a minute. The car was here when they came to look for her. He goes, oh, that's what he said. Oh. So here we go with that whole mess again.
Their home was located along Highway 700, a rural highway with homes spread out and interspersed with farmland, forested areas, and large fields. There are winding creeks, large ponds, and north of the property, the Dan River. Their driveway was long, winding, and surrounded by trees. From there, it was still a decent walk to the one store in the area, but generally, Angela never walked anywhere, except for occasionally to that little store to get ice cream with her kids. To get to some of the nearby towns, by car it was 15 or 20 minutes north across state lines to Danville, as well as about 15 minutes to both Eden and Reidsville.
There was a little convenience store that her and the kids would sometime walk to get like a ice cream or something like that. But I know we went over there. It was a little mom and pop store. And when me and my younger sister went back there, we went and asked again because my aunt had already driven over there the day that, you know, she called the sheriff, and she drove over there and asked, have you seen her? And they're like, oh, we saw her and the kids last weekend when they came in for ice cream. But that was it.
Being out of state, Melissa and her younger sister felt completely helpless. They arranged to make the trip out to North Carolina and see what was going on for themselves.
I believe a week and a half to 2 weeks later is when myself and my younger sister arrived in Danville. We were going to pick up my nephew, who was 5. My niece was going to stay there and finish schooling. She had somebody to stay with. We went, you know, to the home to get the belongings. We went to speak with the detectives. And one of the detectives seemed very, I guess the junior detective seemed interested, and he was currently studying, you know, alternative religions and, you know, things like this. So he goes, I heard that she was Wiccan. And I was like, yes, she was Wiccan. And And so he goes off on that. Oh, sometimes the satanists, you know, kidnap them during certain periods of the years to do rituals. And he was like on this kick about this. And then the other detective asked me about medications and stuff. And I said, well, our medications are sitting at the house. That's when I told him that, you know, she had fibromyalgia and that she was bipolar. And literally, to this day, that guilt still crushes me for saying that, because he literally closed his notebook and took not another note the whole time we were talking to him. And he said, oh, she probably just ran off. After that, their whole search was run her social security number, you know, once every month or whatever. And that was that, until 2008, when the current detectives took over. But by then, you have 7 years of lost time and lost probably evidence.
To this day, there's never been any sort of targeted search conducted by police for Angela. Just a cursory check. Neither the property or any land around it has ever been searched. As far as any investigation goes, the police found no reason to suspect foul play. So there was no reason for them to do a search. The day after they visited the sheriff's department, they went to the house to collect Angela's things, as well as the kids' belongings. When they arrived, Robert's adult son, whom he was living with nearby, was there to let them in. Apparently, Robert was out of town. They went around the house gathering everyone's stuff, including a large journal that belonged to Angela. It was full of poetry and some drawings, but it also had some of the pages ripped out. Melissa recalls that there was supposed to be another journal. The one that Angela had referred to when she was speaking to her aunt, the one that she was using to document everything that Robert was doing. But while they were out at the house, they were unable to find it. According to Melissa, there was a sunroom off of the kitchen that had a large, deep freezer. Robert's son stopped the women from entering that room. He told them that Angela didn't have any of her stuff in there. They felt that this was very suspicious, that he wouldn't let them in that room, standing in front of the doorway the whole time they were there. But he did let them go into Robert's office. They were also allowed access to Robert's shop out back, including the room where he was growing marijuana plants. But he also stood guard in the doorway to the room that contained large saws. Melissa felt so uncomfortable about the visit that she called the detective at the time, and she was told that they would look into it. The problem was that every time Melissa called the police department and asked them about it, she felt as though they were constantly blowing her off, and all of these years later, the detective who is now on the case is unable to locate any evidence that she made that call. The feeling of being ignored continued over the years. So many times they were told a search would happen, but it never did.
I went back and I was looking in old emails, and I only have them back to 2010 because my other email had gotten hacked and went away. And I was looking at these emails, and I have literally been told every year since 2010, and I know before, that they're going to do a search of the property. It still has not happened. He still, him and my sister's quote-unquote best friend, have still never been actually taken into a police station and been questioned. It's been chit-chatting on the porch occasionally, on his porch. I'm hoping, as we have somebody new helping us, it's been me and my best friend doing this for all these years on our own. It's too hard, I think, emotionally. You know, my other family members have helped here and there, which I'm so grateful for. And I do have one aunt that's able and a niece in Virginia that they go out and pass out flyers and they keep it. And then another cousin, they keep everything going back there. But I'm hoping maybe now, because we did have somebody contact us just yesterday on the Facebook page saying, hey, I knew her. My kids used to play with her son at their house, and told us about an incident that had happened one day when she was bringing the lady's children back home, that my sister had told her about Robert taking all the phones out of the house. So she had to go get a home phone and keep it in her purse so she would be able to call. And this was approximately 2 weeks before she disappeared. So we immediately put her in contact with the detective, and we're hoping maybe by, you know, I have made a fuss as much as I could. I have made a stink. I didn't realize a lot of these options were available and out there for us to try. I've tried the things that I knew to try over the years. But, and, you know, now there are, we are lucky to have things like podcast, and hopefully we'll get some media behind it, media attention finally, that somebody will actually do what they should have done in the beginning. You know, I know evidence is lost. The house has been remodeled. The shop's burned down twice. Search the land. Can we have a cadaver doc go search the land? Like I've been told that's going to happen for all these years, and it's never been done. Can we take Robert in for questioning and not act like you're their BFF sitting on the front porch?
Angela's case has never received much media attention, and that's been a constant issue for her family. Without any publicity, it always felt as though there wasn't enough pressure put on the police to actually do something. It's affected their ability to get both closure and justice for Angela.
Well, we've never even had anybody contact us that knew Angie at that time until yesterday, after all this time. She's like, wait, I knew her. I didn't know she was, she just assumed that they had already found her and people had justice and that was that. And she lives 7 minutes down the road because she's never heard it publicized.
Around a month to 6 weeks after Angela's disappearance, Melissa was told that Robert had either sold or given Angela's car away to her best friend at the time. What Melissa and the rest of her family cannot reconcile is why, if Angela's husband and her best friend assumed that she had just walked away and might come back at any time, why would Robert give Angela's car away? That car has never been tested for evidence. Police didn't even attempt to speak to Angela's best friend for years. Around the time of Angela's disappearance, her best friend did something strange. A week or so after the missing persons report was filed, the best friend called Angela's teenage daughter and told her that she had talked to Angela and that everything was fine. Melissa told me more about her interactions with this friend.
She lives in Danville, and she would never, like, we tried to go over to speak to her when we were back there to pick up my nephew. We tried to go over to speak to her, and we could hear her inside, and we banged and banged and banged on the door. She wouldn't come to the door. We've tried over the years to talk to her, and until recently, she hadn't even ever talked to the police, to the sheriffs. I think she definitely knows what happened to her, because she is the one that contacted my niece like a week later and said, oh, I talked to mom. Don't worry. She's fine. Don't worry about it. And then last year when I spoke to Robert, he said, you know, with the detective, he said the same, that she told him the same thing. I know I believe that she had told my niece that. I don't know if I believe Robert that she told him that. It was told to them multiple times over the years. Multiple times, you know, telling the original detectives and then telling the other detectives. And then when the new detectives took it over in 2008, they actually sent one of the, I guess, junior detectives to where my niece was living and actually did an interview with her. And she stated the same thing again. And she knew him before my sister did. They all, like, you know, hung out together and, you know, partied together, went to parties together or whatever. And Robert did admit to me that they had, before my sister, that they had gone on a few dates together, but she wasn't his type of lady.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Over the years, Melissa has been told that detectives have interviewed Robert twice, and each time he was asked to take a lie detector test, but each time he refused. The current detective on the case, whom Melissa feels a good sense of support from, has been trying to arrange an interview with Robert's adult son, but she's been told that every time they have scheduled something, he cancels or doesn't show up. She's also tried to speak with the best friend again, but she doesn't want to talk. She still lives in nearby Danville, and Robert still lives on the property that Angela supposedly walked away from. Last year, in 2017, Melissa and her husband went back to North Carolina to see the detectives, and also to see Robert, and to make another attempt to try to talk to that best friend.
You know, my husband and I saved some money, and we made a special trip back there just to see what was going on in the case, what we could do, perhaps hold a vigil. I felt very motivated by the things I was told ahead of time that, oh, we should hopefully be able to do a search maybe while you're here. You know, here we go with the search again. You know, we can do this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, okay, so I'm really motivated. So me and my husband drive all the way to Virginia. And I told her, I said, I would be willing to speak to him if he would be willing to speak with us. And I said, I won't go, of course, by myself, because I don't want to disappear too. So the detective made the arrangements, and we went out and spoke to him, and he goes, oh, you know, she brought me coffee out to the shop that morning, and she told me she had to go somewhere. And then he said maybe she was suicidal. She could have went in the bushes somewhere and killed herself. Or I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? He's much older now, but he still seems very in control of his mind. And now I'm like, okay, this is because now everybody is constantly asking questions. So now we're going to throw that into the mix. But nobody else that had anything to do with her, family members or friends, nobody else thought for a second that she was depressed or suicidal.
During that meeting with Robert, he seemed to want to point fingers at that best friend.
When my husband and I did talk to Robert last year with the detective, he kept making very vague comments that if we wanted to know the truth, that that's who we needed to talk to. And the detective was right there. It's recorded on the detective's phone. And still, nobody has hauled her in and talked to her. Like an actual interrogation, not chit-chat over the telephone. That seems to be the thing back there. You just go have tea on somebody's porch or have a little chit-chat on the telephone.
After the disappearance of their mother, Angela's daughter stayed in North Carolina to finish school, while Melissa and her husband raised Angela's son. It's been a tough road for them, and for that reason, Melissa has chosen to keep their names out of the podcast. Melissa just wants answers, and she just wants to know what happened to her sister. In 2008, a local paper did a story on Melissa's quest to find Angela. Melissa's pushing got the Rockingham County Sheriff's Office to agree to take a fresh look at Angela's disappearance, but they still continue to state that there's no indication of foul play, something which everyone who knew Angela has a lot of trouble accepting. In that 2008 article, Sheriff's Detective Juan Tejeda stated that the vast majority of adult disappearances in the county were a result of the person deciding to up and leave. That same year, a friend of the family who had begun helping with the case had encouraged family members to have their DNA put into the system. That way, a match might be made to a Jane Doe sometime in the future.
And I'm hoping maybe that now, because Robert was 20 years older than my sister, so he's in his 70s now and not doing well. But maybe now that they're older, maybe somebody will finally say something. You know, it baffles me that this has gone on this long and nobody has really, you know, ever done anything in the beginning. Now you have detectives trying to catch up 10 years worth of messed up. And this isn't the, and it's not the only one. There was also another lady that disappeared. She lived about 20 miles away. She disappeared 2.5 months after my sister, and she had children that were left behind. She went, was going someplace to go and go Christmas shopping. She disappeared in December of 2001. And apparently the Rockingham County Sheriff's Department at that time treated her case the exact same way. Nothing was ever done. I feel like they don't know how to handle it. I do feel like, you know, maybe the one detective, I don't know if he kind of halted things that could have been done because she was bipolar, or if it just because, you know, you have small departments and huge counties, you know, you have like 3 detectives taking care of a whole entire county. I still think that's an issue. You know, this is a almost 17-year-old case, and you have detectives that are on, detectives that are off. Do you still have the rest of the things going on in your county that you have to take care of? I'm hoping that we can get the information out there and get a huge force behind it, that maybe somebody will finally get tired of keeping secrets and say what needs to be said. At this point, I don't even care if there's a prosecution. At this point, I just want to bring my sister home, properly lay her to rest, and give my mother some peace before she dies. I don't want my mom to die not knowing where her baby is. That's all I want. So if somebody wants to call Crime Stoppers and tell them where she is, where we can find her, I'm okay with that. I'm okay if we never prosecute anybody, because it's my belief that karma will take care of you in your afterlife.
So what happened to Angela on September 20th, 2001? Angela's case is one where the real mystery seems to be why nothing's been done to try to solve it. The police have stated that there's no evidence of foul play, but did they ever really look for any evidence? Why wasn't the home and surrounding property searched? The story that she just walked off doesn't seem very plausible. If you look at the area on a map, it's very isolated. Where would she have walked to? The day she disappeared just so happened to be her second appointment with her divorce attorney. Is that just a coincidence? It's also strange that her friend contacted Angela's daughter and said that she had spoken to her and that she was fine. Why hasn't this friend been questioned more about that? Then this same friend ended up with Angela's car? If you really believed that she just walked away and was fine, wouldn't you expect her to come back? This friend had also previously dated Angela's husband. Does she know more about what happened to Angela? I can't understand why Robert hasn't been looked at further, since there's a history of abuse, and Angela had just gotten a restraining order the month before she disappeared. It appears that her case may have been overlooked because of misconceptions about the Wiccan religion and the fact that Angela had bipolar disorder. Even though she had struggled at times in the past, she had always set up arrangements with her sister to keep the kids during those tough times. Her history of being a responsible parent, even during the toughest times, makes me think that she didn't just walk away that day and remain hidden for almost 17 years. For Angela's family, they're hopeful that one day they will see justice. That brings us to the end of episode 136. I'd like to thank Melissa for sharing Angie's story. If you have any information about the disappearance of Angela Whalen Hudson, please call the Rockingham County Sheriff's Office at 336-634-3232. Currently, there's a $1,000 reward from Crime Stoppers for any information leading to an arrest. You can reach Crime Stoppers at 336-349-9683. There's also another $1,000 reward that has been personally donated to the cause. This reward is for any information which might help in locating Angela. Angela's family has a Facebook page set up for her, and that's called Bring Angie Home. They also have an email if you'd like to submit a tip. That's bringangiehomenow@gmail.com.
What Crime Stoppers has said is that if it leads to the arrest, but at this point, if it just leads to a close in the case, that they would be willing to do the $1,000 for the tip line. We also have the person that has been helping us has also put up a $1,000 reward for any information leading to her whereabouts. It doesn't even have to be to have anybody arrested or prosecuted. It's the $1,000 for where she is. And then if people aren't comfortable calling Crime Stoppers or passing information on the open social media page, we do have an email set up. And if they want to remain anonymous, they can tell us. We will pass the information to the police and we will get rid of the email. And that's bringangiehomenow@gmail.com. Or if they just have little things that they think might not be important and they just want to send them to us, and we can go from there. My hope is that maybe, you know, we can pull some people in, interrogate them, let them feel like there's some pressure, like they know stuff that, you know, maybe we don't have, but maybe that'll be enough.
If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find the links and promo codes mentioned in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Please stay tuned until the very end of this episode to hear about one of my favorite podcasts called This Is Actually Happening. I've been listening to This Is Actually Happening for years, long before I started the podcast, and it was a huge inspiration for the personal stories that you hear on The Vanished. I can't recommend the show enough. Join me next week. I'll be back with an update about a case I covered earlier this year. And then after that, a new case from Virginia. Thanks for listening.
We live our everyday lives with the sense that we know who we are, what we want, and what will happen. But at some point, many of us will experience something unthinkable, a massive, unpredictable disruption that rattles our sense of self at the core. Who are we then? How do we recover? What do we become? I'm Whit Misseldine, and these are the questions at the heart of This Is Actually Happening, a podcast featuring the uncanny, extraordinary, true stories of events that have dramatically altered the lives of ordinary people. With riveting accounts of near-death experiences, traumatic childhood events, and spiritual transformations, You'll meet a son who was shot by his own father, a woman who was kidnapped by a fake police officer, and a man who woke up in the morgue.
People say, like, that could never happen to you. So now, once that happened, it's like, well, anything can happen to me at any time. Like, it doesn't matter how irrational it seems.
No one even can understand. You can't measure the magnitude of that pain. You can't measure the pain that we went through.
All of a sudden, within 100 meters of your house, that's where the worst thing happens. It's suddenly the world becomes different. You can't go back to who you were.
With a highly distilled first-person format that has no narrator or host interjections, these are astonishing and often haunting stories that will stick with you long after you listen. You can find This Is Actually Happening on your favorite podcast app, as well as SoundCloud and Spotify, Wondery.com, or thisisactuallyhappening.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.